thank you so much for being in our assembly this evening. While doing research for the lesson this morning, I developed a springboard lesson from that. Don't want to talk about a figurative clothing, but a literal clothing that the Bible speaks of. And I think you will more than likely appreciate some of the points that are made in the lesson tonight. Do clothes make the person? Benita E. Crumley of San Jose, California, wrote this in 1989. Clothing generally influences the behavior of the wearer, and one has but to notice the difference when a young lady dresses in feminine dresses and then switches to faded jeans, sloppy sweatshirts, and soiled sneakers. She becomes a different person altogether. Numerous studies have been done in order to determine the effects that clothes and hairstyles have upon children's behavior, and the findings apply to adults as well. Now, she relates this story so you'll know exactly what she's thinking about when she made that statement. In one such experience of mine, where I was involved with a kindergarten class in Campbell, California, public school, the little bully of the group had long, shaggy, unkempt hair, which all but covered his eyes. His clothing was equally as bad. The other children picked on him. They didn't really like him, and he fought back with a vengeance. As a last resort, when all else failed the child, I said, "Danny, before you come to school on Monday, tell Mommy you need a haircut and some clean clothes." The teacher was mortified and quaked in her boots for fear of repercussions, as you can probably imagine. But on Monday, a totally new little boy came to school. He had been transformed. He had a radiant face, beautiful big brown eyes, and a grin from ear to ear. The kids all gathered around him, and they were so pleased with his new look. They could not believe their eyes. Danny's belligerent and unacceptable behavior never returned, and even his learning problem improved. What made the difference? It's not at all uncommon for us to make judgments about a person that walks into the room and we see how they're clothed. We do that a lot of times, meeting people for the first time, judging something about them from their appearance. How does this person groom himself? How does this person dress? And such judgments can often be quite near the truth, really. Our appearance tells us a lot about others. It tells others a lot about ourselves. We need to be careful that our appearance is casting a true impression to other people about who we are on the inside and what our character is and who we serve in this life. Consider the following words which describe and suggest clothing. And see if immediately when I say these words, if you can picture a person by me saying these words that describe clothing. Gaudy. Modest. Immodest. Coarse. Sloven. Neat. Hippie. Or beatnik, depending on what generation you were raised. Appropriate. Sloppy. Dainty. Suggestive. How we dress fairly well tells people the kind of person we are, and what we stand for. We must not fail to realize that what is manifested outwardly does reveal what is on the inside. Jesus taught this truth in Matthew 12, beginning in verse 34. The mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. The good man brings out of the good treasure what is good, and the evil man out of his evil treasure what is evil. Just as our speech reveals what we have treasured in our hearts, what we wear tells something about what is in our hearts as well. It tells other people about our emotions, our attitude toward life, and toward those people that we are associating with. And yes, it may even reveal a lack of godliness. In this lesson, I'd like for us to note some of the things that the Bible indicates to us about clothing. What it reveals about a person in times past, and consequently what it can reveal about people in our present day. So think with me about these passages as we flash through, and what it says, what these passages say about the clothing that people wear. In the first place, clothing might suggest if one is rich or poor. James said in James 2 and verse 2, "For if a man comes into your assembly with a gold ring and dressed in fine clothes, and there also comes in one who is a poor man in dirty clothes," you see, the clothing indicates something about the lifestyle, doesn't it? All right, secondly, the clothing may reveal whether one lives in a king's palace or a poor shanty. Matthew 11 and verse 18, "What did you go out to see? A man dressed in soft clothing," Jesus said of John. "Those who wear soft clothing are in king's palaces," Jesus said. Thirdly, it may signify if a person is filled with sorrow. In 2 Samuel chapter 3 and verse 31, David said to Joab and all the people that were with him, "Tear your clothes and gird on sackcloth, and lament before Abner." In Jonah 3, beginning in verse 5, when Jonah preached to the city, the people of Nineveh believed in God, and they called a fast, and they put on sackcloth from the greatest to the least of them. When the word reached the king of Nineveh, he arose from his throne, laid aside his robe, and covered himself with sackcloth and sat on the ashes. So clothing said something about great sorrow being experienced in one's life in those days. Fourthly, by the modesty and discreetness of clothing, it may indicate if someone is godly or ungodly. From the New Testament in 1 Timothy 2, verses 9 and 10, Paul instructed Timothy to teach these principles, and he said, "Likewise, I want women to adorn themselves in proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly garments, but rather by means of good works, as is proper for women making a claim to godliness." Fifthly, it may suggest that whether or not someone is displaying a false piety. In Matthew 23 and verse 5, Jesus said, they do all their deeds to be noticed by men, for they broaden the phylacteries and lengthen the tassels of their garments. Similarly, in Mark 12, beginning in verse 38, in Jesus' teaching, he was saying, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes, and like respectful greetings in the marketplaces, chief seats in the synagogues, places of honor at banquets, who devour widows' houses and for appearance sake offer long prayers, these will receive greater condemnation." Sixthly, it may identify the type of people that you associate with by what you wear. Zephaniah 1 and verse 8, "Then it will come about on the day of the Lord's sacrifice that I will punish the princes, the king's son, and all who clothe themselves with foreign garments. Number 7, it will suggest whether one is a male or a female, as we considered at length in our lesson this morning. Numerous considerations enter in to determine styles. There are many cultures in this world, many variations, many weather conditions that are different from each other, numberless areas of the world where man has taken up residence. People in hot climates, of necessity, wouldn't dress themselves like Eskimos in Alaska, would they? Neither would the South Sea Islanders, nor those in the tropical jungles, dress in the same manner as a country such as the United States that does have 4 clearly distinct seasons that are pretty much marked clearly by the weather. But taking all of these things into account, there was always in the history of mankind to be a distinction made between male and female. Deuteronomy 22 in verse 5, a woman shall not wear a man's clothing, nor shall a man put on a woman's clothing, for whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord your God. In the 1960s, it became increasingly difficult to distinguish, if you viewed some young person from a distance, to distinguish if you were looking at a male or a female. Because many of the males of our culture during that day began to wear their hair quite long, shoulder length, and beyond. And it was difficult to tell. Their clothing didn't indicate a lot of times whether they were male or female. And some of that is still true today. One must remember that in biblical times, clothing for males and clothing for females was different only in style and only in detail, not in the kind of clothing. Men did not wear pants, and women did not adorn themselves in skirts and blouses when Deuteronomy 22 and verse 5 was written. Undoubtedly, it is true that God does want some sexual distinction to be made between males and females by their clothing choice. But it's not legitimate for me to preach or us to say to others that all women's pants are wrong. Or, for that matter, that Scottish kilts for men are wrong in that particular culture. A woman can be as feminine in a modest pantsuit and fully comply with 1 Timothy 2, 9 through 10. And men can still be masculine in a robe-like garment, as in some Near Eastern countries today. But two principles must be borne in mind. First, the Christian should dress appropriate to his or her gender. This distinction, incidentally, is apparent in all cultures. And then secondly, the godly man or woman should dress modestly in a manner that does not solicit illicit sexual interest or be gaudy enough to show off material possessions. Number 8, at times in various cultures, it has signified if one is a virgin. In 2 Samuel 13 and verse 18, the story of Amnon and Tamar, we are told that she had on a long-sleeved garment, for in this manner, the virgin daughters of the king dressed themselves in robes. Then his attendant took her out and locked the door behind her. 9, likewise, in some cultures, it may identify one as a widow. In Genesis 38, verse 14, Tamar and Judah, so she removed her widow's garments and covered herself with a veil and wrapped herself and sat in the gateway of Enaim, which is on the road to Timnah. Verse 19 says that she arose again and departed and removed her veil and put on her widow's garments. So by the garments, one could tell if one was in mourning as a widow. Number 10, it may suggest that one is a harlot. In Proverbs 7 and verse 10, "And behold, a woman comes to meet him, dressed as a harlot, and cunning of heart." That's no surprise to anyone in this culture, is it? Number 11, it may identify a person as a prisoner. Usually when there's a jailbreak in some county around us, or usually when someone escaped from prison, like a couple of guys did recently, usually you can spot that person from a distance. They have very unique clothing that identifies them as a jail inmate. That's been true in the past. In Jeremiah 52 and verse 33, "So Jehoiachin changed his prison clothes and had his meals in the king's presence regularly all the days of his life." Number 12, it may reveal that one has a very special love for another person, as in the case of Joseph. Genesis 37 and verse 3, "Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his sons, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a varicolored tunic," a multicolored tunic, indicating this special love. The 13th passage I've found is that it may identify one's wife or mother as one who provides good care and protection for her family. Consider Proverbs 31, 21 through 25. In talking about the worthy woman, "She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them, and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future." You see the important relationship of clothing in this passage? The 14th passage I found is that it may suggest the type of activity that someone is engaged in, or the type of function that one is attending. Jesus spoke in Matthew chapter 22, beginning in verse 11, and is telling a parable, and he said, "When the king came in to look over the dinner guests, he saw a man there who was not dressed in wedding clothes. And he said to him, 'Friend, how did you come in here without wedding clothes?' And the man was speechless. Then the king said to the servants, 'Bind him hand and foot and throw him into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.'" So in this story, clothing was used as an illustration to make a very important point, but it in the illustration, it had something to do with the attending an affair and associating with certain people. That was very important. And then another passage that I found, it can reveal the respect or lack of it that one has for God when approaching His presence. From Exodus 3 and verse 5, you might recall that when Moses appeared before the burning bush, he was instructed, "Do not come near here. Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." In Matthew 18 and verse 20, Jesus reminds his disciples, and consequently you and I as Christians, "For where two or three have gathered together in my name, I am there in their midst." Now, if I'd have told you from the beginning that I was going to have a 15-point lesson tonight, that wouldn't have struck you very well, probably, would it? That's why I didn't tell you up front. But I found at least 15 places where the Bible talks about clothing in connection with some aspect of a person's life. And I think that's very interesting. Okay. It's interesting. So what? What does that mean? What does that mean for you and I? Is there an application for you and I based on what the Bible says about clothing indicating certain things about people's lives and who they associate with and what they're all about? In other words, do clothes make the person? You be the judge. Do clothes make the person? I want to suggest to you 2 points, a mere 2 points. Number one, God gave us a positive message as to how we must dress in order to please Him. And I think Christians would be pretty much agreeable with that, wouldn't we? In recent years, Christian men and women have become lax, I would say, just making a judgment based on opinion, but lax in their attention as to what is considered proper dress for those professing godliness. From the time when man became aware of his unclothed state in the Garden of Eden until now, our God has been concerned about what people wear and has given instructions to guide us in the way that we ought to clothe ourselves. From the very beginning, He had a hand in telling man, you're going to wear this, didn't He? When Adam and Eve, due to the shame of their nakedness, after they had sinned, not before, after they had sinned, they made clothing from fig leaves for themselves. God viewed that as inadequate. And God clothed them in Genesis 3:7-11, and Genesis 3:21. But today, too many of us have been unfavorably influenced, I think, by the fashion world around us that is largely ruled by homosexual designers and patronized by the rich and by the vain and by the bored, both men and women, who set the pace in dress for the equally bored, idol-worshipping, and publicity-seeking rest of the people in society. In our headlong dash to be like the pack, like everyone else in the pack, we have lost sight of proper decorum, seemliness, dignity, decency, etiquette, and a sense of what is proper, correct, or right, to say nothing as to what God requires us, to our shame. The Bible is very clear on what God's guidelines are. For example, in 1 Timothy 2:9-10, phrases that are used, that are selected by the Holy Spirit to reveal to man what God's mind is, are these: proper clothing in the New American Standard Version, modestly, discreetly, not with costly garments, and what is proper for women making the claim to godliness. And by the way, those principles do apply to men as well. Men's attire can be just as immodest, either just as gaudy or just as suggestive as women's clothing can. So those principles are very important. And I think, in view of that, that you would agree with me that God has something in His mind that He desires for His children with reference to clothing. And then secondly, the most important place that we go in this life as Christians is the assembly to worship God. Would you agree with me about that? We might not forget, or we might forget, if we are not careful, that when we come into the assembly to worship God, we are coming into the very presence of the Lord Himself. Remember the passage I read from Matthew 18:20? For where two or three have gathered together in My name, there I am in their midst. That's just as true today as it was when the Lord spoke these words in the first century. This is not a casual affair when we come together to worship God, where we can approach it in whatever way suits our fancy. God laid down very strict rules with regard to his children back in the days of Moses. Notice what he said in Exodus 19, verses 10 and 11. The Lord also said to Moses, "Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their garments, and let them be ready for the third day, for on the third day the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people." Now likely someone will say, "Well, preacher, you know, we don't live under the Old Testament anymore." And that's true. I concede that point. But is there something in the passage that does show a principle of respect that those who follow God should have when they come into the presence of the Lord? And I think Bible students would agree with me, yes, there is something there that is significant and important. Someone might say, "Still, that doesn't apply to us today." Well, maybe that's true with regard to a lot of things that are said in Exodus. But when I read Matthew 18 and verse 20 about the Lord being in our midst, I just have to make the connection with what's in Exodus 19. Each Christian, young or old, male or female, is the only Bible that many people in the world will ever see. We need to think about that. And it's of utmost importance that we set a proper example, if for no one else, the people in the world. Some belittle the importance of how they adorn themselves in the assembly of the saints when they say, "Well, preacher, you know, it's what's in my heart that really counts." Now, I can't argue with the content of the heart being a very important thing. I can't argue with that at all. But would you say that that's all there is to service unto God? You know, the children of Israel could have said, when Moses said, you folks need to wash your clothes and prepare yourself and consecrate yourself because the Lord's going to appear. They could have said, "Oh, Moses, that's a lot of extra trouble. You know, really what's important is what's in our hearts." They didn't make that argument, did they? They obeyed the command of Moses because they knew that Moses was speaking the oracles of God. Some might object, "Well, you know, preacher, you can't be too strict on people. It'll turn people away." Hardly. Our women will be lovely, and they will be dainty, and they will be feminine, desirable, and adored creatures, as they are meant to be, as the climax of God's creation, when they adorn themselves as a manner professing godliness. They will. And our men will be Christian gentlemen, proud to be seen with godly women. And our women will be honored to be seen with them. And dress has a lot to do with it. Remember, we're children of the King. We are priests to our God. Revelation 1 and verse 6. What an honor that is. Let us not disgrace ourselves, nor bring reproach upon the Lord because of our thoughtlessness and our carelessness and our careless regard for what is proper dress for those professing godliness, whether male or female. Since clothes do give identity to the wearer, one needs to ask himself, how do I wish to be perceived among other people? How do I wish to be known? What do I want people to know about me? In Bible times, certain garments identified a widow, a harlot, a priest, a prophet, such as John the Baptist, who wore a coat of camel's hair. It identified a ruler, a king or a queen. those people who were in deep sorrow, people who were attending a wedding feast for invited guests, to mention some of the ones that are most familiar. In our time, the rule still holds, I think. Our clothing identifies us most of the time. When you see someone walking down the street dressed in a uniform, you can tell if that person is a soldier, a marine. You can tell if that person is a policeman or a policewoman. You can tell by the way someone dresses if they're a doctor or a nurse. You can tell a lot of things about people. Is it a UPS guy knocking on my door? That man's a chef. She's a waitress. All by what people wear. There are dress clothes, formal clothes. How many would be admitted to a dinner at the White House wearing some of the clothing that's worn into worship assemblies today? There are wedding clothes. There are casual clothes. There are sport clothes, school clothes, play clothes, and night clothes or pajamas. We can recognize differences in clothing. And in some places in this country, there might be some laws still on the books that were written years ago, where laws were written to keep people off the streets who were wearing their night clothes. I wouldn't be surprised to see that at all. What are we telling others about ourselves by our appearance? Are we casting a true image of ourselves? It might be truer than we think. Remember, we profess godliness. It's good for us if others can see that by the care that we take in how we present ourselves. I hope this is beneficial for you, and I hope you appreciate thinking about these important matters in our lesson tonight. Thank you so much for listening. If you're in our assembly and you're not a Christian, we hope that we can encourage you by, as we always, point to the Scriptures to make the points that are given, to encourage you to think on God's level. We hope we can encourage you as a believer in Jesus Christ to confess Him before men and receive even persecution if it means you must stand for the Lord in this culture. That you will be willing to repent of sins as they are defined by God. That you will be willing to be baptized in water, as God has indicated in His Word, the means whereby penitent believers receive the remission of sins. We hope that you won't arise from that baptismal pool to walk in a new life as a Christian, as a follower of a child of God, adopted into God's family, a child of God. What a great blessing God has blessed us with in the ability, the privilege, the honor to be able to do that. And we can do that tonight with you, if that's your desire. And if it is, please come to the front and let me know, and we'll help you while together we stand and sing the invitation song.